And the opinions that I express on Gaza Corner are my opinions and are not necessarily reflective of the opinions of KALW public media. And I want to, first of all, start with a headline following the Democratic National Convention. It came from Newsweek. This is not linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist at tangents.com because it's crap. It's just an example of absolute garbage, but I want to read it to you. So the headline in Newsweek was DNC erupts over Kamala Harris Israel-Gaza remarks. That's not what bothers me. I mean, the crowd erupted over everything and anything. But the subtitle reads, Kamala Harris details plan to end Gaza war and defend Israel. She detailed a plan to end Gaza war and defend Israel? What speech was Jenny Fink listening to, the senior editor of politics at Newsweek? There was a brief mention of Israel and Gaza toward the end of the speech. Jenny Fink started her story by saying the DNC has been plagued by protests over the Israel-Gaza war. Plagued by protests? They should welcome the protests. The protests were really not only a very big story and a story that didn't plague the convention. Actually, it's the DNC's reaction to the protests that was the problem in not allowing a Palestinian-American speaker. That's what, in my mind, plagued the convention. I'll get into that in a bit. These were the comments, the complete comments, that Kamala Harris made about Israel and Gaza.
With respect to the war in Gaza, President Biden and I are working around the clock because now is the time to get a hostage deal and a ceasefire deal done. And let me be clear, I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself, because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7, including unspeakable sexual violence and the massacre of young people at a music festival. At the same time, what has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. So many innocent lives lost. Desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking. President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
Okay. So, did you hear Vice President Harris detail a plan to end the war in Gaza? Well, I sure as hell did not hear anything at all that would do that. What I will say, though, is that she talked about getting a ceasefire done. I think just about everybody except Netanyahu, maybe Sinwar, everyone else wants a ceasefire. It's a question of whether it's a permanent ceasefire or just a transient ceasefire where Israel can just go back and continue the genocide. So just saying ceasefire, it doesn't really give you enough information. What's needed is a permanent, durable ceasefire. And the U.S. has never put enough pressure on Israel to make that happen. And the biggest reason is Netanyahu has done everything to sabotage a ceasefire because he sees a ceasefire as a potential scenario where he might lose his government coalition and then face his corruption charges. And also, Harris said, I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself. This incredible argument that committing a war on Palestinians, where the official death count is now over 40,000, but the unofficial death count, according to the medical journal The Lancet, from indirect deaths due to starvation and disease, things like that, in addition to bombs falling on people, that could very well, when all is said and done, be closer to 200,000 or more. That is not a result of an entity acting in self-defense. It's a result of an entity acting to eliminate every single Gazan it possibly can during this window. The argument of self-defense killing a majority of people being women and children and the elderly is preposterous. She mentions unspeakable sexual violence, implying that it was Hamas. It's never been proven. What has been proven is that there was no systematic campaign by Hamas to commit sexual violence. There were isolated incidents. And of course, there are unspeakable, documented cases of sexual violence by Israelis against Palestinian prisoners, and especially since Ben-Gvir joined the government. She talks about desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking, yet the United States is the only country in the world that has not restored the funding for the desperately needed humanitarian aid for UNRWA to do its job in Gaza. UNRWA is essentially the humanitarian government and has been since 1948 or so, 49. No one can do the job that UNRWA does. The evidence that Israel presented, like usual, was not persuasive. So all the countries that immediately jumped following the United States' lead and froze its contributions to UNRWA, all of them have turned the spigot back on, even Germany. Only the United States, which is or was the largest donor, $344 million annually out of a $1.16 billion annual budget. And this funding remains frozen until at least March 25th, 2025. You might remember earlier this year, during the genocide, Congress passed legislation to bar funding to UNRWA. The United States, is a complete outlier when it comes to humanitarian aid to UNRWA. Yet Harris talks about desperate, hungry people, and we won't fund UNRWA. There's a line in the Democrats' platform, which they, you know, put out every 4 years, and it's pretty much the same word for word every 4 years about Israel. It rarely changes. It says, quote, "Democrats will restore critical assistance to the Palestinian people in the West Bank and Gaza consistent with U.S. law." Well, they have an out because U.S. law says we can't fund UNRWA right now because of the racist and just completely uninformed people that we have in Congress. If the policy of the United States toward the Palestinians is bound by U.S. law, why isn't our policies to Israel bound by U.S. law? Now, the Uncommitted Movement, its position is that the United States should condition military aid to Israel. It's not a radical idea. I would support that for sure. But with this administration coming and the one that currently is in, you know, whether it's Biden or Harris, they have said it time and again, they're not going to entertain this. So the question becomes, why is it the United States is willing to violate its own law in order to provide military aid to the Israelis? Advocates of the arms embargo point to the Leahy Law, a 1997 law that prohibits U.S. assistance to, quote, any unit of the security forces of a foreign country if the Secretary of State has credible information that such unit has committed a gross violation of human rights. I don't see how the Secretary of State does not have credible information. It's everywhere. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, B'Tselem, the UN, on and on and on. No one in their right mind can credibly maintain Israel has not committed gross violations of human rights in Gaza and the West Bank. And I would add, these gross violations of human rights happen on a daily basis and have been for 10 months. You don't kill 40,000 Gazans, really probably much higher number, by accident. Quote, we need to hear specifically from Vice President Harris in how she intends to support a policy that will stop supplying weapons in contravention of U.S. and international law that are being used to kill civilians, said the uncommitted co-chair Abbas Alawi during a press conference at the convention on Monday. His voice, the voice of the uncommitted, which galvanized some 750,000 voters to vote uncommitted across the country in primaries, that voice was silenced at the Democratic National Convention. One of the main themes at the convention was freedom. Freedom. In the preamble to the 2024 Democratic platform, which is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist, it says, quote, what kind of America will we be, a land of more freedom or less freedom, more rights or fewer? The DNC emphasized freedom, most emphatically in the context of reproductive freedom. And the Democrats have really come a long way. Do you even know that in 1982, Senator Joe Biden voted for a constitutional amendment that would have let states overturn Roe versus Wade? It was a time when it was far less unusual for a Democrat to support restrictions on abortion. And now it's become the defining issue the Harris campaign believes will lead it to victory in November. However, when it comes to freedom in a foreign policy context, human rights takes a back seat and way in the back when it comes to the United States' geopolitical calculus. There are places in the world the U.S. has little leverage. But Israel is not one of those places. Palestinians have been continually ethnically cleansed from historic Palestine and deprived of basic human rights since Israel's Caesarean birth in 1948. Harris said this during her speech accepting the nomination.
And America, we must also be steadfast in advancing our security and values abroad.
What exactly are those values? Harris had a chance to hint, even a subtle hint, at a new approach to Israel, but chose to double down on the status quo. And here's something very few people discuss. How does support of Israel advance U.S. security? It doesn't. It never has. Israel makes the United States a target, creates more enemies against the U.S., makes it less safe, and it may drag the U.S. into a world war. I happen to think that's what Netanyahu wants. There is no economic benefit to support Israel. So the only possible reason, one that's given quite a lot, is quote-unquote common values. And I sure don't share any values with a country that is an apartheid state. Israel has subjugated Palestinians for 76 years and has far surpassed the 1947-48 Nakba in terms of deaths, displacement, forced displacement, and utter destruction. The complete infrastructure of Gaza is destroyed. It would take, the UN estimates, at least 15 years to just remove the rubble. The genocide could not take place without the complicity of the United States. So much for values. Not only is Israel not a strategic asset, it is a strategic liability. And the U.S. has become more of an outlier on the world stage, trying to cover up for all the crimes Israel commits. Another theme dear to Democrats is inclusivity. It's enshrined at the Democrats' website. Quote, "Above all, Democrats are the party of inclusion. We are proud of our heritage as a nation of immigrants. We know that diversity is not our problem, it's our promise. As Democrats, we respect differences of perspective and belief and pledge to work together to move this country forward even when we disagree. We do not merely seek common ground, we strive to reach higher ground." That's kind of like the about page when you go to the website of the Democratic Party. Inclusion was put to the test at the Democratic National Convention, and the Harris campaign, in my mind, got an F, flunked. The Democrats reframed, above all, remember the Democrats are the party of inclusion, but they reframed above all to silence Palestinian immigrant voices and sought the lower ground of political expediency. The uncommitted movement was starving for anything from Harris that would hint at a more humane policy in Gaza. I think it knew Harris was not going to support an arms embargo, but she could have done other things to appear more open to the uncommitted concerns. For almost 2 months, the uncommitted movement negotiated behind the scenes to have a Palestinian-American have a primetime slot to address the convention. An Israeli hostage family got to speak, rightfully so, but not a Palestinian voice. The last time a speaker spoke on behalf of Palestinian rights at the Democratic National Convention was 1988. Quote unquote, above all, the Harris team chose to silence perhaps the most pressing moral issue of our time, the genocide in Gaza. And among the list of Palestinian American speakers submitted to the DNC was Democratic Georgia State Representative Rua Roman. Roman referred to herself in a Mother Jones piece that's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist as a safe last resort. Quote, if an elected official in a swing state who is Palestinian cannot make it on that stage, nobody else can. And despite being strung along by the DNC, which fueled hope among the uncommitted delegates and activists at the convention, on the final day, on the fourth day of the convention, the word arrived that no one would be allowed to speak on stage on behalf of Palestinians. At that point, uncommitted activists staged an overnight sit-in, and Roman gave her speech as if she had been on the convention stage. Mother Jones has the text, so does Democracy Now. In fact, Democracy Now! Showed a video of the speech, and I've edited it, just a portion of it, which I think is the most stirring part of her would-be speech. Here it is.
My name is Rua Roman, and I'm honored to be the first Palestinian elected to public office in the great state of Georgia.
That's right.
Growing up, my grandfather and I shared a special bond. He was my partner in chief. Whether it was sneaking me sweets from a bodega or slipping me a 20 into my pocket with that familiar wink and a smile, he was my rock. But he passed away a few years ago, never seeing Suba or any part of Palestine again. Not a day goes by that I don't miss him. This past year has been especially hard, as we've been moral witnesses to the massacres in Gaza. I've thought of him, wondering if this was the pain he knew too well. When we watched Palestinians displaced from one end of the Gaza Strip to the other, I wanted to ask him, how did he find the strength to walk all of those miles decades ago and leave everything behind? But in this pain, I've also witnessed something profound. A beautiful, multi-faith, multi-racial, and multi-generational coalition rising from despair within our Democratic Party.
Those are the words of what would have been the speech on stage at the Democratic National Convention by Democratic Georgia State Representative Rua Roman. But she and many others, all of the others on the list were nixed by the DNC and the Harris campaign. I think this will be a forever stain on this convention. Uncommitted organizers confirmed that this was the speech that Roman was planning to give. And they also said they were open to the speech being vetted, even edited. But Roman said she was turned down without the DNC even seeing the speech. Roman told Mother Jones, quote, "We don't know why the campaign said no. We literally have no feedback. We are in the dark. For them to give us a no the same day that Jeff Duncan, a Republican from Georgia, was on the stage, especially when it was my name, was just absolutely a slap in the face." Representative Ocasio-Cortez said, quote, "Just as we must honor the humanity of hostages, so too must we center the humanity of the 40,000 Palestinians killed under Israeli bombardment. To deny that story is to participate in the dehumanization of Palestinians." It's sadly commonplace for the leadership of a political party to be out of sync with its base, with the street. Polling indicates Democrats are split on how to handle military aid for Israel. A YouGov/Economist poll from August 17th to August 20th found a plurality of Democrats, 42%, wanted to decrease military aid. 30% wanted to keep it the same. Only 10% wanted to increase aid to Israel. And a recent New York Times Siena College poll showed widespread disapproval of Biden's approach, with 57% of respondents saying they are at odds with his handling of the war. I don't even think it is a war. I mean, you've got one army and you've got a guerrilla fighting force, not a conventional war. DNC organizers did not comment on the record on their decision to exclude Palestinian American speakers from the main stage at the four-day convention. I'm not sure what they could say. What could they say? We're petrified of the Gaza issue, and we chose to ignore it. I mean, that's probably what they're thinking.